From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 251, recorded live Thursday, January 27th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks HTML5 basics with Mads Christensen.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm talking about HTML5. I've got Mads Christensen on. How's it going, Mads? Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, I'm doing fine. Glad to be here.
So what are you in charge of within Microsoft as it relates to HTML5?
I'm in charge of the HTML editor in Visual Studio.
Okay.
We use in various places, but it's mainly the studio, Visual Studio product lines.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people within Microsoft that are working on HTML5, I know. And like you said, you're working on the editor, so you're the person who is thinking about what the experience will be like for a developer who's going to be living inside of Visual Studio. So, you know, you're going to be adding things presumably to Visual Studio to support HTML5. I noticed recently when I installed the Service Pack beta, the Service Pack 1 beta for Visual Studio, that under tools options and validation, that HTML5 now shows up as an option there. That was added there in Service Pack 1, huh?
Yeah, that's a brand new thing. And you'll find it both in tools option as you did, but also if you have the HTML toolbar open, it's called HTML source editing, then you also have the drop down there, and you might have seen it. But yeah, basically, support for HTML5 and SP1.
So what is that switching that drop down box give me in the editor? What does that add or allow me to do that I didn't have before?
Yeah, so it gives you intelligence and validation for most of the new HTML5 elements and attributes. So HTML5, of course, is a schema just like HTML4 and XHTML and so on, and it comes with its own set of elements and attributes and values, valid values as well. So by enabling HTML5, and you have to do this manually after installing SP1. When you select your schema to be HTML5, you will get these new elements and attributes. And it will show. So whenever you type something, I mean, we're going to drop down the intelligence list, and you have your video tag and footer and header and all these things.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are using HTML5, it feels like to me, to maybe mean more than it really is. I mean, It's being used so often in conversation, it seems very, very scary. I remember that XHTML was supposed to be the next big thing. Certainly HTML4 is, you know, the most successful markup format ever. Everyone right now is effectively writing their code in HTML4. Is HTML5 going to mean I'm going to have to rewrite a lot of stuff, or is it scary? I mean, talk to me about what is this thing that everyone is talking about called HTML5?
Yeah, so people usually talk about two different things using the same name, HTML5. And so HTML5 is also used as an umbrella term for everything that's kind of the Web 2.0 standards. So, you know, the HTML, CSS, WebSockets, some JavaScript APIs, and so on. And then there is the HTML5 that's only the HTML specification and the new version of HTML, the one that takes over from HTML4 and 4.0.1. So that's kind of the distinction between the two, and there's a lot of confusing statements because of this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically, I mean, if you're used to code and or write your markup in HTML4, then HTML5 is very simple. It's very forgiving. So, you know, everything goes. It's not like XHTML where there are certain things you couldn't do. XHTML, you have to close your tags, you have to use value quotes, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to do that in HTML5. So Actually, if your pages are already written in HTML4, all you need to do is just change the doc type to the new HTML5, and your pages are still valid.
Really? Okay. So I understand that the doc type is a lot simpler now. It's just an exclamation point, the word doc type, and then the word HTML. And there's no namespace or big, long, complicated URI at the top of my document.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, if you're using the other flavor of HTML5, the XHTML5, then you actually don't even need a doc type.
Really? So I would just start it with HTML as a root element, and that's XHTML5?
Yeah. So yeah, if you don't have a doc type, then it's XHTML5. Well, of course, you have to adhere to the XML rules of value quotes and, you know, closure tags and so on.
Hmm. Okay. So I can take my existing HTML4, I can put doctype HTML on it, and then presumably browsers might, you know, change their renderers, like Firefox or IE9 might start treating it like HTML5. I assume I might have some small changes in the way things render between 4 and 5 just because I changed my doctype, because I'm making a declaration that this is HTML5.
Yes. I use as a rule of thumb that if it worked in XHTML1 or it worked in HTML4 and you just change the doc type, chances are that it works in HTML5 are pretty big.
Okay. And I understand that there's a bunch of new semantic elements, like article, header, footer, nav. Is that meant to like keep people from using divs for everything?
Yeah, basically it helps you break up your page in a more semantical way. And there are some discussions going on right now within the working groups and online on when to use the new tag section, for instance, and when to use a div.
Hmm.
Because most people probably use divs as some sort of section delimiter,
right?
Or container. So. There is no clear understanding on when to use what. So I think we have to just wait and see what the W3C comes out with and recommend us to do. But it seems that you can do pretty much whatever you want. And no matter what, if you use the footer and header and H groups and all these new semantic markups, it will result in a more semantic document, even though that, you know, the recommendation might change a little bit in the future. Mm-hmm. It is still better than it was before, in my mind.
But these new elements in a browser that doesn't understand them will just be ignored, right? So if I say article or footer, even IE6 will just say, I don't know what that is, and it'll ignore it, just like any stray element, right?
Yeah, exactly. So basically what you have to do for IE6, 7, and 8 is to include a little piece of JavaScript that creates those elements. And once you do that, they just become elements like any other element, and you can use them. So what most people do is that they have this conditional JavaScript include. You know, if less than IE9 thing in your markup, then include this script tag, which then registers these new types. And then probably you also have in your CSS, you want to make sure that they are perceived as block elements. And that's used for styling. So the styling is equal in all browsers.
Okay.
And if you go take a look in the reset CSS, you mm-hmm. know, the reset CSS files done by Yahoo and other entities out there have been used for many years, you'll see them coming out right now with support for these new elements. That's basically what you want to do. You just want to lay the ground for the old browsers and then move on.
So it doesn't necessarily make the browser HTML5 compliant in all features, but it'll definitely make it recognize some of these new elements as being something that's stylable, right?
Yeah, so it'll look exactly the same in IE old versus IE new with these JavaScript things. And it's a very small JavaScript. It basically just says document create element video.
Hmm.
That's basically all you have to do. And then the browser will start recognizing it as a real tag, as a real element.
I see. So some of these tags are semantic and for breaking up sections like article and header and footer. And then some of these are a little bit more interesting, like progress for like a, some kind of a progress bar or video or canvas. It seems like a lot of discussion and a lot of controversy happens around some of these more active tags. You know, like video, for example. I'm hearing lots of people saying that the video tag is a good idea, in theory, but underneath it, you don't really know if your browser supports a particular codec or will be able to play a video until you actually give it a try and see if it works.
Yeah, well, in you can actually, in JavaScript, you can ask whether or not a certain video codec is supported. So you don't have to try, but you can in JavaScript, you can ask whether or not certain formats are supported before starting playing anything.
I've noticed that some browsers, when asked with JavaScript, if a certain codec is supported, they'll say probably or maybe. For example, that, you know, saying that a .avi or a .mp4 is supported, the browser can say, well, maybe, but I don't necessarily know until I see what's inside it, because some of these video files are containers, and you can't tell just by presenting the extension about whether or not a file will be readable.
Exactly. So some of these containers could contain, they have a video and they have an audio part. Mm-hmm. And the video could be in one format and the audio could be in another format. But the container and the file extension of that file is the same. So the browser does not know unless it looks inside of it. But HTML5 actually does have a mechanism for you to specify what's inside. So that you can get rid of the maybes and probably and all that. And just get a clean yes or no.
Okay, so the more clear you are and the more you give it the browser information about exactly what's going on inside, specifically indicating the codec that you're going to use, then you'll be able to get real answers as to whether or not video is going to work.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And I noticed also that the input element has a whole lot of new stuff, because right now there's basically input text and input dropdown and things like that, but now we're going to have input element with types like email and date time and month and week. Are those things that I can do now in Visual Studio? Like, what if I make an input box that's of type email? What will work and what won't today?
Yeah, so what we've done with the new HTML5 schema support in SP1 is that we've taken the old elements, such as input, and updated the value lists. So you will get full IntelliSense support for email, URL, date, and all these other types of all these other values you can use in your type field.
Mm-hmm.
So that is fully supported. But of course, it's then up to the browsers to actually support these things. And as of right now, with this particular one, it's a bit limited. It seems that a lot of these new mechanisms we see in the forms, in the HTML forms, hasn't been as widely adopted by the browser vendors yet. But that'll probably come very soon.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself. Get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. That is interesting that there's all these new things in HTML5, but it doesn't seem like everyone is supporting all the different features. I mean, a lot of attention is spent talking about video, and I don't hear a lot about things like input type equals color. And I don't even think I've seen them. I mean, I run all the latest browsers. I run the latest everything. And I don't bump into those very often out there in the world.
No, I don't actually think that there is a single browser supporting the color value. Opera has the most support for these new types. Mm-hmm. So if you choose date, for instance, it will pop up a date picker and a calendar that you can customize. So you can, do you want it to show weeks, months? Should you navigate? How do you navigate it? You can style it and all these things. Mm-hmm. So Opera, you know, they have support for all these pretty cool features. And it seems that the other browsers are catching up slowly. I mean, it'll probably take some time to get everything supported.
Mm-hmm. So these are markup things that are available to me in HTML5, but I understand that there's also some kind of services, I guess is the best way to phrase it. Things like geolocation and local storage. I mean, these aren't parts of markup. These are basically JavaScript APIs that I can access inside my browser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so when you talk about HTML5, some people they tend to see it as the umbrella term also covering these related technologies such as the new JavaScript APIs, such as, you know, geolocations, WebSockets, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they actually allow you to control a lot more than before. So they're good for geolocation. You can ask the user, where are you? It's it has really great potential for building cool apps. But there are other stuff like WebSockets. Finally, we can get to the real-time web that we've always wanted and has been a real pain before to do. Because of the web is, you know, this I request and you respond, but I have to do the request first before I get any answer. So it's always been a little bit awkward to have real-time. But now we can with WebSockets. Now we just need all the browsers again, and we need all the underlying server-side technologies to pick up this new technology.
It seems like all of the all these different HTML5 features have an associated JavaScript library, like Modernizer is one of the ones that comes to mind. That is a way of saying, use it if you support it natively. Otherwise, try this or try this or try this before completely giving up. For example, with geolocation, it's a JavaScript thing that all these browsers should support, and Firefox supports it, and Chrome and Opera. So I can say, get current position with JavaScript on a geolocation, object. And then, you know, start getting information about where I'm at, whether that be very vague, like a city or a state, or very specific, like an exact Latin lawn. But yeah. I can use like Modernizer, which is a little JavaScript library, and say, if this browser supports this feature, go and use it. Otherwise, maybe try a plugin or something else. Is that the best practice, to be saying, do I support this feature, as opposed to be saying, do I support HTML5?
Oh yeah, you always wanna ask for the specific feature, because the browsers are, you know, their progress in supporting all this is pretty independent of each other. So you see, some browsers have support for one thing but not the other, and vice versa with the other browsers. So always ask for a specific feature whether or not that's supported.
Has that always been the way to do things? Has it always been the right way to do things? But it's 'cause I remember writing a lot of code in the late 90s and the early 2000s that was saying, if I support this version of HTML, do this. That sounds like that was a bad idea.
Yeah, that was a real bad idea. Yeah,
thanks.
You know, browsers tend to evolve quicker than a lot of websites does. So whatever you have coded and whatever is online right now might not change that much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It could be legacy out there. So always ask for the feature. If the browser supports a certain feature, instead of asking, for instance, the browser version, if this is, you know, IE9, if this is whatever. Because you could have plugins. The user could have installed a plugin that actually enables these things.
Mm-hmm.
The browser version, this, don't do it. Always ask for the specific API.
So theoretically, in an ideal world, all of this, you know, asking if it's IE or asking if it's a specific version of Firefox should go away. We should not be doing asking by version now anymore.
No, correct.
Does this mean, though, that I can use features of HTML5 without necessarily using all of HTML5? Like, would I need to go and start using all these different elements if I just wanted my existing website to support geolocation? Or can I ask just for that one HTML5 feature and keep all my markup the same?
You can just ask for that one feature. I mean, that one feature that comes in HTML, the geolocation that comes in HTML5, mm-hmm. It'll work even though your doc type is XHTML 1.0 or HTML4. So it's the browser vendors have been so smart that they have enabled these APIs regardless of what type of website you're building.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually start using all of these new APIs right now without changing your markup.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
See, that definitely changes. That can confuse things because I think so many people out there are saying, you know, when can I use HTML5 and should I start using it today? But, you know, they might just want to look in and say, I just want to use geolocation or I just want to use local storage. They could start doing this today in their applications and they can. And as I said, that there's JavaScript libraries to kind of help them through this with even older browsers. So, I mean, isn't that confusing? I mean, so many people are sitting around waiting for new browsers and waiting for things to settle down. They really could be doing this today.
Yeah, it is very confusing, but I think it ties down to this duality of HTML5, that it's a markup language,
mm-hmm.
but then it's an umbrella term that covers all these different things. So it's because mm-hmm. it's used in those two ways that I think it adds to the confusion.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that's interesting about HTML5 is the specification that's called web storage, or what sometimes yep. people call HTML5 storage. So this is basically yep. local storage. It's like not a cookie, right? It's literally you have a little bit of space on the user's disk that you can put stuff in.
Yes, and you can already leverage this today. I think all the way back to IE6 and maybe before that as well. But then you need one of those JavaScript libraries you're talking about that wraps all this functionality because you've been able to do this
mm-hmm.
in various different ways. In the old IE5 and 6 days, mm-hmm. you could attach, you know, your JavaScript objects to the DOM and use mm-hmm. that for storage, which is a very different way of doing it the HTML5 way. But between the HTML5 and the old IE5 thing, there's been a lot of different implementations across the different browsers. Mm-hmm. So with the right library out there, you can actually start using that already today.
I assume that it's not encrypted or anything like that, but it's basically a hash table that I can put stuff in and I can count on it being there when I get back.
Yes.
Now, is this just literally a hash table that stores itself on disk, or can I do like, is this a little tiny database and I can do some SQL on it?
There are different versions, and the one that you can use right now across the board is the hash table.
I see.
Yeah. Then we have the IndexedDB thing that's isn't really supported yet by any browser. It's being slowly adopted though, so it will be in. And you can do some more funky stuff using that.
But I see.
That's to come.
Right, right. I know that Firefox and IE don't quite have support for that yet.
Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. I remember that there were a lot of hacks back in the day. Before HTML5, there were a lot of local storage hacks, people shoving things in cookies and hiding things in the browser history and, you know, anything that they could do to store state. Probably not a place for a bank to store information about your accounts, but definitely a better place to store information is the user's machine than in a database on the server side if it's not private data.
Exactly. It opens up a lot of possibilities for offline web apps and so on.
Yeah, actually. And that's an interesting question. I know that I run Chrome sometimes and I use offline email. Where is it getting its HTML from? I mean, is it pulling it out of the cache? I mean, how can I visit a page when I was on an airplane and I was checking my email. How am I doing that?
I think your Chrome that's using Google Gears, right?
Uh-huh. Is that where the HTML is coming from in an offline thing? I mean, is the idea of an offline app an HTML5 thing, or is the concept of an offline application something that people have kind of devised or derived from all of these other new specifications and features?
I'm actually not quite sure where it originated. Google Gears, I think, was the first full-fledged solution for this problem. but it was limited. And now Google Gears is going away, and instead HTML5 is taken over. I mean, that's what Google says. So they're going to remove their old implementation for the new one. So right, I just think it's one of those things that started out as a proprietary thing and slowly gained ground and then made it into the standard specifications, like most other things, basically.
Right. It's interesting. If you look at the history of this, almost all of these features were available via plugins or via hacks or via JavaScript libraries, and then have slowly become something that is built in, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't usually think of the standards bodies as paying attention, but somehow they did in this instance.
Yeah. Well, in this instance, the browser vendors kind of took over and drove the whole creation of the HTML5 specifications. So I guess that's why it happened so fast. But usually it takes a long time. There's a long stabilization period for any standard before it gets a widely adoption. Here it seems that all the browsers are jumping on the bandwagon and want to support HTML5, whereas there have been literally no stabilization period of the specification yet.
Yeah, that's so true. It's not done yet, is it?
No. It's done in 2022, I think. That's the... if it's the official.
Seriously?
Date. I don't know where I have that date from. It's you can find it out there.
So the idea of waiting is a silly one. We really should just start doing this now. I mean, there's no reason to wait for anything with HTML5, right?
No, yeah, just start using it.
Interesting. I'm looking online here, and apparently the way that you do offline applications is you have a manifest file. So you say on your root, you see HTML, and you say, here is my manifest, which is a list of all of the things that your website is going to need offline. So it's basically a cache manifest that says, if I'm offline, go and use this. And if I'm offline, I'm going to need this CSS and these images and all this stuff. So it seems very straightforward. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing it.
Yeah, it seems very easy. It's like almost building an application, but without an installer.
Yeah, really, I guess it is. I mean, once you have a link on your desktop, people are no longer going to be able to tell whether or not something is an app that they install or an app that they run in their browser. I mean, I know that my wife has kind of stopped making the distinction with things like Gmail or Mint.com. She doesn't think of them as a place anymore. She does think of them as applications.
Yeah, and it is an application. Mm. It is a web application. Do you ever use the jump lists and the new feature where you can drag your tab down to your taskbar in Windows 7 with i9?
Yeah. I use that with Facebook. That's the one I always use the most. I've dragged Facebook down into the taskbar. So I have a little Facebook icon. I right-click on it, and then I'll click on News, and it'll take me right to that location. So it's almost like tiny bookmarks within within an existing icon. But it also has a little, I just clicked on it right now, and it says I have two mail messages. So there's a little overlay over the icon within my taskbar.
Yeah. And you could do this before IE9 and Windows 7. There was the Prism initiative from Mozilla that enabled that for Firefox. So you've been doing this for a long time, and this probably makes it into the standard someday as well. But it does emphasize that a lot of what we consider to be websites actually are applications, and we can now start using them as such.
Really? There's a thing that turns this on for Firefox?
No, not in the Windows 7 taskbar, but there's if you go search for Prism.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. Yeah, those are called single-site browsers, or SSBs. This is a way of formally saying this is a web application, and then you remove things like toolbars, and then it really looks like an app as opposed to a bookmark.
Exactly.
Definitely. Now, can I write these things now with ASP.NET? I know that I was at web camps recently, and that question keeps coming up. And I've been telling people that if you want to use web forms or ASP.NET MVC, you could definitely start writing HTML5 now. You know, there might be a few quirks, but for the most part, there's no reason to wait. What is your opinion?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, there's. I mean, you can start leveraging HTML5 in your current ASP.NET setup today. That's regardless whether or not you use web forms, MVC, Razor, web pages, web matrix, or any other technology. I mean, it's all supported in the sense that it doesn't break down.
Hmm.
Right. So there, you have full intelligence on some of this, and then, I mean, if you have let's say you have a text box in your web forms, I mean, you can just add a type equals email, and that'll carry through to your browser, so it works fine.
Hmm. So this is I can do this before I get the Service Pack 1, or do I want to upgrade? Do I want to get the beta of Service Pack 1 if I really want to get hardcore into HTML5?
You would probably get the beta.
Okay, so the beta will make it a lot easier for me to do this.
It will.
And I presume that the beta isn't the end all of HTML5, that HTML5 is something that we're going to keep doing and keep improving. So I assume that we'll keep seeing more HTML5 support going forward in Microsoft products. Like once the Service Pack 1 comes out in the spring, that's not the end of it. We're going to keep creating more HTML5 things.
Yes, definitely.
That's cool. Well, thank you very much, Mads, for clearing it up a little bit. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right. Well, folks can go check a look at diveintohtml5.org, as well as a bunch of other great HTML5 websites that I'm going to put in the show notes. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.